Good morning, friends. Brene Brown says it takes 90 seconds for an emotion to fully pass through your body, but after that music and that meditation, I'm feeling like I need a little bit more time. It's very emotional and very, thank you both so much. It's so moving. Okay, right. I'm so grateful to be here this morning with you all again. It's so good to see you. I've been traveling the last 3 weekends. I've been away at a conference on science and consciousness. I thought maybe I'd start with a brief update from that conference since it links into what we had talked about a few weeks ago and then transition into a different topic for today. With the understanding that everything I share, I will provide links to and resources for because I know it's just a lot of information. So this conference, the Science and Consciousness Conference, was such a perfectly timed conference after our conversation a few weeks ago. And this conference is made up primarily of scientists who are interested in the study of consciousness. And most of them were what we would call materialists, so looking at the idea that consciousness arises from the brain. And so there are quite a few talks that I'm excited to share with you on looking at out-of-body experiences, meditation, the effects of being blindfolded and being able to see through the blindfold and what that does to our brains. Specifically looking at brainwave activity and understanding how our brainwaves change when we're engaged in these types of phenomena, also including psychedelics. So there's all these great talks related to that that I'm excited to share with you. There's also some really interesting talks specifically looking at a hypothesis that I just briefly touched on last time called orchestrated objective reduction. So for those of you who really like the idea of consciousness being mediated by the brain, you might really dig this theory. So I have to read it because I always forget it. Consciousness originates at the quantum level inside of neurons. That's the way that they describe it in a nutshell. So it's looking at quantum theory and quantum processes happening inside of individual neurons and explaining consciousness through quantum mechanics. Specifically, inside of the neurons, there's this structure called a microtubule, which kind of looks like DNA in that it wraps like this, but instead of being two twisted, it's three twisted like this. And so they demonstrate through physics. So if you really like physics, you'll really like these talks. They demonstrate through physics, theoretical and practical, that these structures can actually act in a quantum fashion. And they suppose that that's what gives rise to our conscious experience. So I'm excited for you to have a chance to look at those talks as well. And then, of course, that was about 70% of the conference. And then there was the 30% that said, no, consciousness is not material. It's actually non-material, and our material world arises from something non-material. And most of the people in that sphere were coming from an Eastern philosophy perspective and were sharing frameworks of consciousness and how it could be the case that this entire material existence arises from something that is non-material. So at this conference, I had the great pleasure of speaking and being part of a workshop that was called Women on Consciousness Studies. And our intention was to bring the divine feminine energy to a space that has historically been male energy dominated, where presentations are on a PowerPoint presentation and everybody's speaking to the math that's on the slide, which is not always the most enjoyable experience if you're in the audience and it's like 50 equations. So we tried to make something that was more experiential. And I was responsible in connection with Mona Sabani, who I mentioned the last time she and I worked together, for looking at integration and healing. And I thought, oh, what a lovely topic as we're talking about psychedelics, because integration is such a key component to working with psychedelics. So I thought we would talk about that today. So we're going to talk about integration, both from the perspective of psychedelics and spiritual experiences, but also from just a more broader perspective. And it's going to be a touch interactive, so we're going to add just a little bit of some interactivity, that divine feminine energy, into this space today as well. So I know that Brad had sent out a list of definitions last week. And integration, one of the definitions that he had used was bringing all the parts together to make something whole. And I really like this definition. I want to add one more piece to it. This is just my perspective, which is reconciling to what is how I would think about integration. So just accepting and reconciling what is happening in this present moment. And it sounds really easy when I say it. And actually everything in this talk is going to be really simple because in my experience, the truth is actually quite simple, but it's not easy. So everything here is going to be very simple, but not necessarily easy in terms of how we implement it or understand it. And that is reflected in the quote that I shared, which I have to read because I did not memorize it. This is a quote that's taken from Charles Dickens when Scrooge meets one of the apparitions for the first time. And he says to the apparition, "You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are." So he just cannot accept, right, that there's an apparition in front of him. He has to say it's got to be something undigested in his stomach. And we laugh at that now, but I looked it up, and it turns out that apparently in that era, that was the way that they explained phenomenon. They're like, oh, it must just be something happening in your gut. In the same way that we might say now, oh, it's just all in your head, right? It's, you're making it up. It's all in your head. So that's effectively what he's saying. It's just all in my head. It's not real. So it's hard sometimes when we're confronted with something that doesn't make sense. We want to just say, no, can't be real. Well, today we're going to face that head on and we're going to say, what do we do in those situations? So I thought maybe this would be helpful if we looked at three different types of experiences, a psychedelic, a spiritual, or a mystical, and then just an everyday what happens in our life experiences. So for this, I'm going to ask for three volunteers, please, to come up. All you have to do is hold something, but it would be super helpful. So the three people, yeah, come on up. Could I get two other people, please? Yeah, please come on up. One other person. Thank you. Come on up. Thank you. Come on up. Yeah, come on up on the stage. Thank you so much for volunteering. Would you all share your name so everybody knows who you are?
I'm Downey and I'm new.
Hi, Downey. Welcome. Hi.
I'm Tom and I'm old.
I'm Tabitha and I'm here.
Very nice to meet you all. Thank you for being willing to do this. So we'll start with the psychedelic experience. So a common experience that people have when they encounter psychedelics is they see entities. So we're going to imagine that you've had a psychedelic experience.
I have.
And you have seen entities.
I have.
Wonderful. Perfect. We don't even have to imagine. It's just a thing. Brilliant. Okay. And one of the things that also happens when we see entities for the first time is we're confronted with another thing that we tend to hold because we live in Western society, which is that entities do not exist. So I'd like for you to hold that as well, please. So you can see that we're now holding two conflicting ideas after this experience. And we will go now to our spiritual or our mystical experience. So here, let's imagine that you've been ill for quite some time, and you've decided to go see a shaman, and you've had a spontaneous healing. So now that is an experience that you have had. However, you're also a scientist, and you know that spontaneous healings are impossible. So you also are holding that it's impossible at the same time. And finally, a more sort of common but universal experience for you is you've lost someone who has been really dear to you, and you're suffering from a heartbroken heart. And it's been 2 months, and the world around you has said, "I don't understand why you're still sad. You should get over it." So I really appreciate your being willing to be part of this, because the visual representation, I think, is so powerful in showing how we literally physically hold things in opposition to each other that are really difficult. And what do we usually do when something conflicts with a long-held belief, like entities don't exist, spontaneous healing is impossible, and we should get over heartbreak. Well, what we tend to do is we tend to find the nearest closet and shove all that stuff into it and say, yep, okay, we're just going to put it behind there, or we'll put it under this rug, and we're just not going to talk about it because I don't know where to put it. And maybe someday you meet somebody who also talks about entities, and maybe you're willing to open up that closet a little bit and say, oh, yeah, yeah, one time I had that experience, but is it safe? Can I talk about it? I don't know. I'm going to put it back in there for now. This is what we tend to do. This is obviously not integrated. The other thing I really like about this visual representation is, if you're familiar with internal family systems at all, that's a therapeutic tool in working with different parts. You can really see here visually how different parts of us arise. And IFS, or internal family systems, tends to work with these parts from childhood, but you can see that they can arise at any time in our lives, that we can create a new part, also known as the what I like to call, or Gurdjieff calls, but I like to share it with people, the multiplicity of I. So Ouspensky, in his book In Search of the Miraculous, speaks about how Gurdjieff would say there are all these different versions of I within ourselves, and at any given moment, we don't know which I we're going to get. That is an unintegrated, unwhole situation. It might feel whole because it's all an I of us, but it's not a fully integrated I. So what prevents us from this integration happening? So I'm going to go through each one of these, and then I will let you all sit down. I so very much appreciate your being up here and participating. So the simplest way to describe it is conditioning and identity are the things that get in the way of allowing these things to come together as one whole thing. So let's look at each one of these. So in this case, entities don't exist. That is a conditioning that we're told in our Western culture, that that's a thing that doesn't exist. And we might have an identity around that. We might have an identity that says, I am smart and I know what's real. And so if I admit that I've seen something that doesn't exist, it really threatens my identity as a smart person who knows what's real. So I don't want to have to admit this in, because then I have to do something with that identity that I'm holding on to so tightly. The same thing happens here in the spontaneous healing. We have a conditioning as a scientist that says it's impossible, and an identity of being a scientist. And this is something I feel like I can speak to, because I've had this issue of, after so many years of identifying as a scientist, it becomes really difficult to then let go of that identity and all of the things that come with it, all the beliefs and all of the knowledge that I'm supposed to have and the way that I'm supposed to show up in the world with that identity. So obviously that gets in the way here. And then in your situation, it's also very similar. So the conditioning we have in our culture, a conditioning that says there's a certain amount of time you're allowed to be sad. And after that, we're very uncomfortable that if you continue to be sad, we don't like it. We're telling you to stop. And there is an identity wrapped up in that around strength. So if I'm a strong person, I don't get sad. I don't cry. And if I do, it's not for very long. So now we're threatening our whole identity here by still feeling sad when we're not supposed to be feeling sad and we're supposed to be a strong person. So in order to integrate, we have to really work with the conditioning and the identity, which brings us to a space of healing. So in this moment, I will ask you all, and thank you all so much for being a part of this. You all can sit down now. Thank you for demonstrating this so much. Thank you. So appreciating. So appreciative of you. Thank you. So the healing is not as simple as just saying, well, let it go. Let that identity go, which I know we love to say to each other. You know, expand your worldview. Just let it go. Calm down. Well, when you've been building that identity for 40, 50, 60, 70 years, it's what you know as true for you. It's not so easy to just go, let that go. It feels like a death. So we really have to do some profound and intense healing work to be able to integrate new experiences that conflict with our conditioning and conflict with our identity. So I'm breaking this healing into two different components for simplicity's sake. And I'm going to explain both of them, and we'll do one of them together. So the first one is what I'm going to call mental. It's using your mind. And it's the one that I use for myself around conditioning. And again, these things are very simple. They're just not always that easy. So let's take the heartbreak example and the you should only grieve for a certain amount of time. So if I were to look at that conditioning, I would ask myself, well, why do I feel like that's true? So I could use a simple answer, right? We're in a society that says this is how it should be. But if I go deeper, I might be able to find experiences in my childhood where I was crying and somebody said to me, are you done yet? Stop. Right? You've been crying for a half an hour. Why are you still crying? So I might be able to find not just one of those examples, but many of those examples. And suddenly I can start to see how a pattern has built up in me that I believe that I shouldn't be allowed to feel a certain way for a very long period of time. So that is how we can start to look at the conditioning and find the spaces where not just more universal condition, but personally it's affected us and start to heal from that. So getting in touch then with that emotion, which is the second part. So once we've done the identification of where things come from, so why do I feel like this? Where does it come from? Is it true? Which is another really important question. Is it actually true that I should stop crying if I'm sad? Maybe not. It's an interesting take that our society has. I just, as an aside on that. So then I might say, well, how does it feel? So this gets into the somatic part of the healing. So how does that feel in my body when I think about, oh, I was really sad and somebody told me not to be? Or I believed in Santa Claus and then I realized it wasn't true, which is very akin to the entities thing, right? I don't want to be an idiot. I once believed something wholeheartedly and then everybody told me I was stupid for believing it. So now I don't want to believe in entities because now it's the same pattern being repeated. So you bring that emotion up and that's what you want to work with. So everything we're about to talk to in terms of somatic healing is about healing. It's not about negating the emotional response or not having an emotional response. It's about healing the original emotional response that's blocking us from integration. I just want to be really clear on that because sometimes it gets misconstrued of like, now we don't want to have emotions. No, no, no. Emotions are wonderful. They're very, very helpful. And I'm going to focus on three that are less well known because I think the ones that are more well known you probably have already heard of before. So one of them, this is pretty well known, but I'm not sure if it's been touched on, and I want to bring it to your attention because there's somebody in the community, at least one person who's exceptional at it, and that's sound healing. So I'm not sure if you've heard of this before, but sound healing can be incredibly, incredibly powerful. There's a woman out of Holland whose name is Jen, and I realized this morning I have never said her last name out loud, so I have no idea if I'm about to mispronounce it or not. Glazer, maybe? Something like that, you could Google with what I just said and find her. She is exceptional, and she works with sound bowls and creates this wonderful healing space. So if you're going to work with sound healing, you bring up the emotion. So it might be this emotion of feeling like you weren't allowed to cry or the feeling that you were stupid for believing in Santa Claus or whatever other emotion you want to heal. And then you let the frequency of the sound start to help move that emotion through your body. In fact, sound healing is so profound that when I was at the conference, there was a group of neuroscientists that created an app for soldiers who are suffering from PTSD that is all sound frequency that's intended to get your brain into a specific state in order to heal from PTSD. And the person who developed it himself was in the military, and he used it on himself and was able to help himself overcome that. So sound is profoundly healing. And I also mention it because what a beautiful, wonderful thing that we all have access to. It's like we have right at our disposal the tools that will allow us to heal all of the experiences that we have and allow us to help integrate They're just right there. It's not complicated. Another one that's very helpful is called tapping or emotional freedom technique, which is a tapping technique that taps at certain points in your body. And I share this because we're not going to go through all of them because it takes about 10, 20 minutes just to tap all the ways. And then that would be the whole time we'd just be tapping. But I'm showing you some of the points. So they're kind of here on the face. There's a couple here. And you would do the same thing. You hold as you tap to help move it through your body. Again, with the idea of healing that trauma that's associated with that emotion. And the last one that I wanted to share, there's also two practitioners here in Grand Haven who practice this technique. It's called muscle testing in combination with the emotion code. And this we can do all together. So I wanted to just kind of do it just to show you what it's like. So if you take your hands and make two circles like this, and now you're going to put them inside of each other like this. Okay. So when the idea is when you say a true statement, usually it's hard for them to break. And when you say a statement that's false, they're going to break. So I'll give you an example, and then we'll all do it together. So if I say, my name is Allison, which is true, it stays, right? So if you all say your name, so try it. My name and then whatever your name is. Nice. You see how it stays? Okay, so now we're going to say, I'm going to say, my name is Kate. And the reason it works, it breaks, is because it's really hard for us to hold a lie and attention at the same time. So now try it with another name. My name is something that's not your name. Do you feel how it breaks? Yeah. So it's cool. So you can use this. Another way of, and I'll share how you use it with the emotion. Another method is actually putting your arm out straight like this and having it be, you hold it tense or tight, you know, firm. And then you say the same thing, like to test it. You can do, my name is Allison, and then my name is Kate, and it'll drop a little. Or like yes and no will usually have it drop a little. This one's easier to do with another person because after a while, at least for me, my arm starts to get, my whole body's just tired from this. This one's a little bit easier. So you can ask questions, and practitioners will ask questions about where the emotions are held in the body using this technique. So they might say something like, for example, I could say, do I have an emotion trapped around allowing myself to grieve? So that's a yes. So it looks like I do have one. And then there's something called the emotion code that asks where it's being held in your body. And so you just go through and you ask, like, is it being held, I don't know, is it being held in my kidney? No. Is it being held in my lungs? No. You would just go through this code and find where it's being trapped, and then there's a process for releasing it. And while I know all this probably sounds like, what is she talking about? This is such a powerful tool to use for processing and healing. That's why I wanted to bring it to your attention. It's something that Mona's used personally, I've used personally, and like I said, there's practitioners here who can help with this. And it's so simple, but it is, again, not easy, because a lot of times what happens is when you release things, there's a flood of emotion that comes with them. And what happens is when we have emotional freedom, so when we do some of these healing practices, if we work with sound, if we work with dance, if we work with art, if we start to really heal these things, having emotional freedom allows us to have experiential freedom. It allows us to take the experiences that we're having on a moment-to-moment basis and integrate them into our lives. It allows us to have intellectual freedom, to be curious, to not be afraid of what we might find, because we're not holding on to anymore necessarily an identity or a set of conditions. So there's something really beautiful and freeing that comes with this healing process and the process of integration. It takes time. Kind of moving back to psychedelics, if anybody's interested in doing psychedelic assisted therapy, it's really important to work with somebody to integrate that experience afterwards. Anybody who gives you just one integration session, it's not enough. You'll end up with a bunch of stuff that doesn't have a home and conflicts with a bunch of other stuff that you know. And unless you're willing to do the work on your own, it ends up in a closet somewhere because it's too much. If we take all of this back to everyday life, it isn't just for the huge traumas or the strange and weird things that might happen. It's every experience that we have every day. In fact, we live in a world where almost nothing is integrated. We put everything in at least a dichotomy, if not more, good and bad, right? Right and wrong. Our whole country is in a state of it's got to be this way or it's got to be that way. Well, that from one perspective is simply a lack of integration. Bless you. It's simply a lack of integration. Because integration, as I said at the beginning, is a reconciliation with what is. And what is doesn't have a value judgment on it. It's not good or bad. It's not right or wrong. It just is. So I really appreciate your letting me share this perspective on integration with you all and some of these healing practices. I'm more than happy to share more, but after this or the end, and I'll send all the practitioner information to Brad so that you can have it. And hopefully, yeah, this was beneficial. Thank you so much again for having me.